Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State collective serving 31 sports and over 800 student-athletes at Penn State. I'm Jim Galante. With me, Executive Director of Happy Valley United, Mike Villagrana. Mike, finally happened. We've got a coach.
Yeah, everybody. What's everybody going to do now that we have a coach? Like, you can't. What's next now? Because I know the message boards now. Is the traffic going to slow down? Is Twitter, the engagement going to slow down? Because I know that was a big vehicle for a lot of these rumors and all this roller coaster for everybody. It seemed like a fun time for everybody.
Well, let me help you out there, Mike. We've got lots to complain about. Okay. you and I are recording this on Sunday. We don't have an official announcement on the bowl game. We think it's Pinstripe Bowl, Penn State, and possibly Clemson. We won't get into that, but we can complain about that. Let's see. Players are going to start hitting the portal. We could complain about that. Matt Campbell's got to start naming a staff. We could complain about that. Come on, Mike. We got plenty to complain about.
Oh, yeah. And just like the whole landscape of college football, this should be in the first year of the automatic bids and all that stuff. So much going on right now. So much. And it's really exciting. And everything that's going on right now, I'm pretty confident that it won't look the same way in different areas of college football this time next year.
Oh, yeah. Just real quick on the playoffs, it's, you know, Notre Dame and BYU, they'll be complaining. And how about this? I didn't read the article, but I got the headline. Duke is complaining because they didn't get in. You lost five games.
Yeah.
You can't complain about it.
Yeah, but I mean, anybody that has some kind of justification for them to be in the playoffs, that's what they're going to do. They're going to politic. That's, you know, everybody was doing it this past week on sports talk radio and in the sports media. Everybody was pleading their cases. Everybody's going on these shows that they never go on, but they go on there and they got the SID. They got a whole rap sheet of stats to throw out there. It's just part of it, and it's part of why it makes college football fun. And I'm on the side where I've always been a fan of expansion, just because the later in the season, I think a lot more teams are involved and there's things going on, and so it makes it a lot more interesting and fun for the fan.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind the 12-team playoff is a great improvement over the 4-team playoff. And I think we've seen it in the last year, in the first year of it, this year. There's more teams who could win this thing, okay? And that's what makes it interesting. What I do think will happen, though, is with Duke going into the ACC Conference Championship game with five losses, the tiebreaker method in the ACC was awful. And what I'm betting, the first thing you're going to see conferences do is work on that tiebreaker. And what they'll end up doing is using maybe even the college playoff rankings itself. If there's a tie in the conference, you know, they would have much rather have had Miami playing in that game than Duke with their five losses.
Yeah. I think it's all going to get turned upside down. Maybe not this next year or then, you know, the short term, 2-3 years, but long term, I think, you know, the super conference, that type of deal, I think division, stuff like that, I think that's going to become a reality down the line. Like I said, maybe not next year or the next couple of years, but after maybe everything gets, and I, you know what I was going to say, maybe after they figure out the NIL, but that's not the way that they do things. They like to do everything at one time and not do anything well. That's why we're in this position. But yeah, that's tough. You got the ACC being crazy. And yeah, like you said, you got, you know, Manny Diaz, who we like, pleading his case for the playoffs. It's just nuts. You know what I don't like? I don't like, and trust me, I've been at Hampton. I've been at smaller schools, so I'm always rooting for the underdog and the little guys. But JMU and Tulane getting in over a Notre Dame, who I despise all my life, or a Vanderbilt, doesn't make sense to me. Like, you know, everybody listening knows Tulane and James Madison is not winning the national championship, right? So that kind of waters down their system. And, you know, it's already a cringy system listening to the committee, them all. You see those pictures of them sitting in there looking like it's a college room, putting up multiple TVs, you know, to watch all the big games. It's a joke.
Well, my favorite thing is, and I saw this, the head of the committee was being interviewed yesterday. I think it was the college game day or, you know, the pregame, the morning thing.
Yeah.
And great question. He asked, okay, here you have Alabama going into a conference championship game. If they were to lose, that's their third loss. How do you deal with that? Do you hold that against them? How do you? Well, the guy spent 5 minutes not answering the question.
They're politicians.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what they are.
Whatever the answer is. And, you know, my feeling on it is I don't like seeing a team get punished for playing that extra game, but it's still a game. To me, that could be a tiebreaker, you know. So Ohio State didn't get punished badly for losing to Indiana, but obviously they're going to drop from number one below Indiana, but they didn't drop them any further. That's great. Now, had Indiana beat them 65-0, well, guess what? You know, that matters. They probably would have dropped more, and I think it's justified. So I think you treat it differently, but my point is, answer the question. You know, there's got to be an answer to it, and you know, be transparent. But that's just not going to happen. All right, Mike. Yeah. Let's talk about what we really should be. Is Penn State has a new coach. That new coach is Matt Campbell. What do you know about him? What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think let me start from the beginning on this, right? We started in the middle of the season, and it was somewhat of a surprise, if not definitely a huge surprise and shock to college football, let alone state college when they let go of James Franklin. So you go 50 days, and then the people are starting to get antsy, and you're hearing all the roller coasters, all the rumors and stuff. Searches for a coach that I've seen in a while, and I don't know how much of the craziness was real versus what was just manufactured on Twitter and the talking heads stirring things up, or people just stirring things up just to get clicks or whatever. So you put that, you look at that and what all the fans endured during those 50 some days. And I think they were skeptical at the end of the day. I don't think people thought Pat Kraft was going to be able to pull a really good hire, and that's what he did ultimately. He was able to pull in Matt Campbell, and I think everybody that hears about Matt Campbell, going all the way back, you know, prior to I feel like every year that he's been at Iowa State, whenever that coaching cycle, that carousal cycle during the season starts, his name is like the first guy for every single job. So it's like everybody knows of Matt Campbell, but I don't know how many people actually know who and what he is about, you know, from a day to day. He's kind of like a mysterious guy when it comes to that. The people that work for him that I've gotten to talk to just in the past, they absolutely love him. It's almost like a cult following. Me and some of my closer buddies, we joke about it with Matt Campbell, It's like whatever he does in his systems and his culture, it's powerful, because people that walk away and go on to do other things and work for other schools, they talk about him like he is the best to ever work for. I think you see some of that stuff on YouTube and on videos about him and his kind of mantras. He's a different guy. But to answer you, long story short, to answer your question, there's a lot of unknown about Matt Campbell, and I think it's almost like it's meant to be that way, and he likes it that way probably. But I don't know. I'm looking forward to meeting him and the new staff that he's bringing in. I believe he's going to be here Monday, and at the time, yeah, so I think they're going to announce him. I think it was reported as long as the board of trustees, they sign off on that, and then they're able to officially announce him. I don't know much about him. It's almost kind of like a Dabo Swinney Clemson feel. Coaches and staff, every year, anybody that's doing well or has a really good structure in whatever department they work in within a college program, they usually go out and they try to, learn from somebody, and they'll do some professional development, go visit. Clemson is one of those places that's just really tight knit. Like, you can't really get into Clemson. And that's kind of like what it is to me, the feel when it comes to Iowa State. A lot of people don't talk that we've been in there. You don't know like the details of like how he like really runs a program, but heard some pretty cool quotes from the Iowa State AD that makes you believe like this guy's awesome. Like he's going to be a good fit. And I'm just excited to get things rolling here with him, because going through a transition in the middle of the season, you want some kind of normalcy, right? You want him to get here, his staff to get here and get rolling, get everything implemented, and just looking forward to that process.
Yeah, I think fans in general, the Penn State fans, are happy with this hire. The process itself got a little messy. We know that. For me, and we'll talk about this more in the second quarter as we're approaching our end of segment here, is I'm concerned. I was concerned about fit for whoever it was that came in. You and I talked about it a little bit. Satake coming from BYU, hey, seems like a really good coach. Not sure a great fit. Matt Campbell, I don't have those same concerns. We'll talk about it when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United. It's quarter number two of our show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Mike Villagrana, Executive Director at HVU. Mike, we finished up segment number one. I was talking about the fit. I think fit is much more important than a lot of people give it credit for. And this is a guy, he comes from, I think, your neck of the woods, right? He's an Ohio guy, been coaching in the Midwest, has some experience in the state of Pennsylvania, even though he was at Pitt for a little bit. But as you've always described, where you come from in Ohio, very similar personality types as we would find here in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, I would agree to that. Blue collar, he seems low maintenance from what I've heard. Like, he's not going to be like a prima donna, try to, win, you know, win the press conference type of guy every time. You know, he's going to be who he is. That's what he seems like. And from all my Ohio connections and coaches and high school coaches, they absolutely love him. So I think you're going to continue to see definitely us recruiting the state of Ohio, which is awesome. I, you know, always like to hear that ever since I got here in 15 and being able to pull a couple of Ohio guys was awesome. So to see that continue with him is going to be pretty cool. But, yeah, he's a Mountain Union guy. And I don't know if people out there know how dominant Mountain Union has been. They won, like, I want to say they went multiple seasons without even losing at one point. But, you know, he went that track. So, you know, he had to, you know, bust his tail to earn a spot on that team. And then, you know, he's just a hard worker, it seems. And he earned what he's gotten. And this is the new chapter in his career. I'm trying to imagine how that feels for a guy like him that's still relatively young. And now he's taking on a whole another chapter, right? After like a couple years at Iowa State, he's probably thinking he's going to be there forever, right? Like you can only imagine, just like Coach Franken here, you know, they're so entrenched in that community after so long, right? Being the face of a university like that, you know, from your families to the schools to the sports to everything. So it's got to be a lot emotionally for somebody like that to take on a new job and put on new colors and represent a new team with all kinds of different dynamics in that previous school, right? Like Coach Franklin's going through it right now. So I think that's pretty interesting to see how he takes that on. But somebody that's been a head coach and successful like him for the amount of time he's been doing it, I'm sure he's got a good plan for this, and he's got good administration and everybody to help him with that transition, which is very important too. That the administration, everybody has a plan to help him speed things up.
Here's one of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I've heard people argue either side of this coin. Iowa State, a Power Four team, Big 12, Iowa State. Not the kind of school that recruits, not like Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, but also not like Penn State, Michigan. They recruit three stars.
Yeah.
So the one side of the argument is, hey, here's a guy who did more with less. Then you hear this, well, he's not used to coaching 4 and 5 stars. Yeah, but I just want to hear your take on that.
Well, a lot of the has to do with where he's at, who's he competing with, the pool within like a 3 to 5 hour radius of that school, right? So you look at where he was at Iowa State. Like, you have to recruit a little bit differently. Even their in-state rival, like Iowa, they're doing the same thing. They're not getting 4 or 5 stars every year. They recruit at a level where they're really trusting their evaluations, and they put a lot of resources in the evaluation process. And I love that, because if you can do that, you can evaluate. All right. And then you can also recruit. Then you're set up to be to succeed here from a recruiting standpoint, because he's going to be able to evaluate, which I think, you know, Penn State traditionally has done a pretty good job with evaluating, you know, the Abdul Carters, the three stars, right, that turn into those 5 stars. So I'm excited for that. I think it's going to be great. I think he's going to see a more dense pool of talent in this region, which he's obviously very aware of, recruiting heavily in the state of Ohio. So I think it's going to be a relatively an easy transition for him when it comes to the recruiting. I honestly, that's not on the forefront of me, the concerns with coach, and especially, you know, I think there will be a number of guys that are retained from the previous staff. The announcement that Terry is going to be on the staff is huge. There's going to be multiple lettermen that are probably going to be sticking around. That's going to be huge to help bridge those gaps while he is establishing those new relationships in state and at the perennial high schools that we recruit. So I think he's in a good position. The fact that he can – I like it, the fact that he can evaluate. He's a known evaluator, right? versus he's some guy that just can walk in a room and knock your socks off with talking, right? I think you're better set up the other way around. Be a good evaluator and then be able to come in there and tell him why he's good and why he's a good fit at Penn State or whatever school you're recruiting for.
Well, and you come from that recruiting, scouting world. So you get it that there are players, the five-star guys are easy to evaluate. That's how they became five-star guys. It's how good are you at evaluating the four and three-star guy? Because there's a lot of difference. And is this a guy, not only that he could make our team, but we could develop him into something more? So I'm with you. That kind of ability is invaluable as a college coach.
Yeah. I'll tell you a quick story. When I was at Mississippi State, at the same time I was with Charles Huff, there, he was the running backs coach. I think he was associate head coach there at the time. And Huff being known as a good recruiter, obviously, I think it's well known around college football. Well, Breece Hall was coming up the ranks, and I was in charge of the recruiting department at that time. And I remember, you know, we're doing our regular due diligence and watching film. And I remember Breece Hall coming across the table, and we loved him. And so then we got the film, went through the chain, and then Huff ended up signing off on him and liked him. He wasn't a big time recruit, but his film was big time. And we offered him. And I remember hearing about the running backs coach in Iowa State saying, "No, we're not losing this guy. Like, yeah, we're not losing him. Good luck." Basically, like, challenging us. And granted, it's Mississippi State. Well, you know, it's not Alabama, the SEC. We get that. But we still feel like we have a little bit of a leg up being the SEC. Charles Huff, you know, being a recruiter of the year, all that stuff, recruiting Saquon Barkley. And they felt, like, confident about it. Like, and they had conviction about it, too. And I was like, wow, that is awesome. That's a culture. That's a culture thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? We flirted with him and we tried sway him to come on a visit, probably like a lot of other schools did, but they held him and they did a really good job. So that tells you a little bit about the recruiting philosophy and keeping guys and the evaluation process. So that's a good sign.
I think not just recruiting them, but developing him. And oh, by the way, he's an NFL player.
Yeah, he's an NFL player, and what happens, and you guys see this a lot, guys end up getting late offers by maybe a big school, right? Maybe a big school lost a big-time recruit. All right, well, now that kid, that Breece Hall, he's next on their board. So then they offer him late, and then all that recruiting that school did to have that kid committed – goes to waste because now he sees a big logo and then he goes to that. I'm saying that because that his staff, from what I know, was able to keep these kids when people try to come in and poach their commitments. That's a huge thing that you have to have in college football. There is no a kid's committed and you stay away from them. They become more attractive to a lot of other places.
And it also speaks well, I think, of the kid who keeps his commitment to an Iowa State as opposed to looking for the bigger name logo.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know what I heard, I don't know how true it is. I'm sure we'll find out, but how Matt Campbell was, he was reached out to early in the process, but wires got mixed. So it didn't get to him. If that's true, that's a pretty funny story. Moving forward.
I heard it was, and again, reading it online, I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm glad you did. I read that they reached out to the wrong agent.
That's awesome.
His previous agent. And, you know, those kind of things happen in the real world, and you kind of hope that it wouldn't happen in something so high stakes, I don't want to call it game, but so high stakes a profession. I mean, again, this is a billion-dollar industry. You'd like to think you'd be able to get to the right agent if that is the issue.
Yeah, but there's a lot of dynamics too that play into it, that it's not just like picking up the phone and trying to call somebody, right? There's a lot of discretionary things that, you know, the, you know, whatever school's looking for a new head coach, you got to think about, especially Pat Kraft in this administration. And like most of the time, we didn't know what the heck was going on, right? Like, so he did a really good job. He was always thinking probably about how he's going to keep this, you know, under the table. We don't want to get anything out unless he meant to. So, yeah, I just think it's a funny story. It'll be a funny story kind of moving forward, especially, you know, if everything works out and, you know, we're, you know, winning national championships. And it's just a good story, especially with recruits and families.
Oh, by the way, I almost didn't get this job because wires were crossed. Well, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about this process and how we got to here. And also, you know, my favorite whipping boy is always the media and how they will take things. This went from 0 to 100 miles an hour so fast as far as a national story. And until Kalani Sitake, I'm not sure any of the other conversations have been confirmed. You know, you heard everybody throwing out names. I'm not sure we ever really got confirmation on them. So it's hard to tell what was really going on in those 50 days or whatever it was. But we're going to talk about that process a bit when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number 3. Our show is brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State Collective, serving over 800 student athletes across 31 sports at Penn State. I'm Jim Galante. He is HVU Executive Director Mike Villagrana. Mike, you're talking a bit about this process of Penn State acquiring their coach. So many names were thrown out there. I'm sure some of them were legitimate candidates, but I'm also pretty sure some of them were never part of the conversation. I doubt that you know, but I'm just wondering, how did these names get out there? I have to think some of it is just someone puts two and two together and they come up with five.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of... you know, people are able to monetize the information that they get and stuff like this. It's easy to just make stuff up, right? Because you can't really actually be called out for it, because you just go back to your, hey, I got a source. Well, who's your source? I can't give up my source, right? Like, so you have that dynamic, and then everybody knows that these agents for these, not only just for the coach, but also for the schools or the schools themselves, they may put something out there to get a feeler for what I've heard this. I'm not saying this is what Penn State has done, but I've heard in the past, like, schools will put out a feeler or a rumor on a potential candidate just to get a feel for what the fans are feeling, right? I'm not saying Penn State did that, but that's something, right? And then you have the Jimmy Sextons of the world who is going to tell Thamel to post that, hey, somebody's hot in the mix, when he hasn't really, but you know, there's a whole cat and mouse game there, and I think it's taken a turn for the worse this cycle, just because it's almost like a monopoly what they're doing and driving up the market in a day and age where we're, you know, pinching pennies everywhere, right? Every dollar matters. So that's unfortunate, but yeah, there's a lot of games that go on there with all the rumors on there. Then you have the local guys that think they know something, but they don't really know anything. But hey, let me put out there what I heard from the janitor, right?
Yeah.
The janitor told me he walked by coach's office and didn't see anything, right? Or like something. Like it's funny. Me and my buddies that are coaches or in the space, like every time this season comes around of coaches moving all over the place, we just always, there's always like one or two guys in our group that just make up the most random stuff. And we'll make fun of those people and be like, what, you're batting like 130. All right. Like those aren't Hall of Fame numbers. Like you're making stuff up. So yeah, there's stuff all over the place. You just try not to get too emotionally knee jerk about everything when you hear it.
Well, I think the agents are probably the most guilty of misinformation, but they do. I read somewhere, what is it? The Penn State coaching transaction earned various coaches hundreds of millions of dollars in extensions. So if you're an agent for a coach, you throw that name out there as being considered, and his current school all of a sudden comes up with an extension. Would any of these guys had gotten an extension if the Penn State job wasn't available and somebody brought their name up?
Well, I'll go the other route. I won't say if Penn State became available. I will say, does this happen if Kurt Cignetti doesn't have one of the biggest turnarounds I've ever seen or heard about? And everybody thinking they can find a Kurt Cignetti. Right? Like everybody in the country wants a Kurt Cignetti, right?
Well, like, number one team in the country. Yeah. Why not?
Number one team in the country. And just like handily beat the number two or Ohio State to win the first, I think, Big Ten Conference championship since like 1940 or something like that. Like that's the issue, right? Everybody, that hot coach, will drive the market up. And so Lane Kiffin drove the market up in a different way, right? Like that was all Kiffin. He has a great year. He's just polarizing the way that he is, right? People love him. And even if you don't agree with him, but then you have a Kurt Cignetti who's just winning. Yeah, that's what he's doing. He's just winning at Indiana, right? And so that's going to drive the market and get other presidents and athletic directors wanting the same thing, because if Indiana can change their luck in the last 80 years, in 80 years, I think, I always make fun of my math. I went to WVU, but 1940 something was the last Big Ten championship. That's insane. So to me, and my buddy who's the GM over there, I was talking about it. I was like, I just think you guys, like, he has changed the way people are thinking and how you can win and how you can flip rosters and all of that. So I don't think it's so much the Penn State effect. I think it's the Cignetti effect.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt he changed the way people looked at it. I thought I read somewhere 1967, but whether it's 50 years, 60 years, 80 years, don't care. It's been a long time since Indiana has won anything. And the fact that, you know, Kurt Cignetti did it. What I find fascinating is, if everybody wants the next Kurt Cignetti, where did he come from? James Madison. He didn't come from, you know, pilfering a, you know, power four successful coach. It was going after someone from that next level. So to me, it's like, get that right guy instead of trying to recreate, you know, which why I always said, don't bring me Urban Meyer. Bring me the next Urban Meyer. You know?
Yeah, I've been saying that. Yeah, it's true. Hey, and you did fact check me, but I will say 1945 was their last Big Ten championship outright. So 67 might have been a share, but outright was 45.
Okay. Well, then let's say we were both right.
Oh, yeah, a long time. But yeah, but that's changed things, right? It's amazing to me. It really is.
But it's also something of a guide in how a team can improve. He brought how many players with him from James Madison? He used the portal. You and I have talked about this. I always say, you know, well, I think we both do. It's about the quarterback.
Yeah.
And Curtis Cignetti was 2 for 2 on transfer portal quarterbacks. So, you know, Matt Campbell, if we're going to, I think he knows with this small recruiting class, with a lot of guys moving on through graduation or going to play on Sundays, Penn State's going to need the transfer portal to help out here, bring in guys. So let's talk about what Penn State does to put a team together for next season. It's about also retention of the current team. You mentioned it early on. Terry Smith is going to still be on the staff. What does that mean as far as player retention, Mike?
I think that is huge. I think that's big, but I don't think that's everything. If you're, say, Grunkmeyer, I think that's great that Terry's staying, or even like you're Tony Rojas. Right? That's awesome. But you got to get a feel for the new guy. So when he comes in, and I'm sure that's going to be one of the first things that is on his to-do list is player retention with our top returners. So those guys are going to try to get a feel for him. So what's said in that room and how they feel leaving that meeting is really important from the first time that they talk to Coach Campbell. So that's TBD, right? But I think we have a really good core on this team, and I'm sure he sees that, and I'm sure that's been relayed to him that the guys that we would probably want to retain, that's going to be the goal number one. And, you know, he can recruit. He's a culture guy. So I'm assuming that, you know, when he gets in there, those guys are going to leave feeling confident that they can trust this guy and they want to play for that guy. I think that's why, like, he has such a good culture. People want to work for him and play for him. And again, I say this all where, like, I really don't know firsthand. It's all secondhand. People I've talked to, hearsay stuff. I'm pretty confident that that's going to be his first thing that he's going to be doing. So hopefully, and maybe he's got to evaluate some of the top guys too, right? That's probably part of it. Like, you know, the administration and Terry can probably come in and say, all right, Matt Campbell, here are our top guys that we want to return, right? Okay, so maybe him and his staff and his GM or the personnel guy that he brings in, they start watching him. Maybe that top player on our roster last year isn't a top player in the scheme and what he's trying to do next year. So that's part of it. There's a lot that goes into the player retention. So that's going to – and that takes time, right? And he's going to meet with a lot of these guys. That's, you know, you're looking at over 80 to 100 guys depending on how he does it. It's a huge task. I don't envy any of these coaches that go in transitions. I've talked to you about this before because I've worked for 4 head coaches in the last 8 years, 3 of them being first-time head coaches. That first year is tough. And not in a bad way. It's just a grind. It's just a grind getting your feet on the ground, getting all your processes set. Getting everybody to believe in you is huge. Getting that staff, the players and your coaches all in a rhythm takes time, right? And it's a grind. And the harder you grind, the more you grind, the faster you'll get in a rhythm. So there's a lot to be done.
And it has to be done within a couple of weeks because of the portal coming up. And it's a two-way street. You know, players have to be convinced that Matt Campbell's the right guy. Matt Campbell has to be convinced that the player is worth retaining. And that's where I think having Terry and perhaps a few of the other guys who hopefully Matt Campbell will trust Terry very quickly. And if Terry says, believe me, this is a guy worth keeping, it's not just his ability on the field, but he's a character guy and so on and so forth, that kind of trust will be built up quickly.
Yeah, I agree.
So, all right, when we come back, Mike, I want to hit on, you know, there's some positions like you need 5 offensive linemen on the field. You need another 5 ready to go. So bringing in more doesn't change. They're not taking the place of someone who might be there. However, that quarterback position, there's only one guy on the field that's the quarterback. I want to ask you about that because we have a situation where there's Grunkmeyer. There's also a quarterback at Iowa State with eligibility left. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State Collective. I'm Jim Galante. He is Mike Villagrana, Executive Director at HVU. This is quarter number four of our show. Mike, when we finished up quarter three, I kind of set us up for a quarterback discussion. You and I have both, we're both Grunkmeyer guys. Really like what we saw from him, especially these last couple games. But you have a coach coming in from the outside, from Iowa State. Iowa State, there's a quarterback there named Rocco Beck, who's kind of that gritty kind of guy. He's got another year of eligibility. Now, I don't know what his status is. Maybe he has no desire to leave Iowa State. Maybe he does and wants to follow Matt Campbell. But I would think this is one of the first decisions Matt Campbell has to make. If you're Ethan Grunkmeyer, who's gotten the taste of starting, are you ready to play second fiddle to another quarterback coming in? And if you're Matt Campbell, you maybe have to make that decision.
Yeah, like I just talked about, I think that's like one of the first things that he's going to do. He's going to evaluate that film, probably meet him and see if he fits what he wants to do. It's probably a tough position for him because, you know, we talk about having quarterbacks everything, and not everything, but it's a big piece.
It's a lot.
Success, right? So, and he has a guy at Iowa State that he trusts and has won games for him, and he's gritty. He represents probably, you know, what that culture is with Matt Campbell. So it's going to be interesting. But I would think after watching Gronk's tape, and then meeting Gronk and talking to him, that he's going to walk away feeling good about him being the future quarterback of Penn State. But that is tough that he has a quarterback there that could enter the portal and come here that has experience, knows him in and out, right? So that guy could end up being an ambassador for him and help with this transition if he would come here, right? That's a quarterback. Everybody listens to quarterback. So that's definitely a tricky situation that he's in. He'll come in, and that's probably, like I said, one of the first things that he'll do.
And those are the decisions that make or break a coach. As we said, Cignetti was 2-for-2 on bringing in quarterbacks. It's critical.
Yep.
So, I wanted to bring up another topic with you a little bit because it also, you asked what fans are going to talk about. Here's one that we've got. There was the release of the audio from apparently a meeting between Pat Kraft and some of the players. First of all, that's not an audio that should be released, in that this was a private meeting. That's not something you want to see have happen.
No, it's unfortunate. I think it's just the times that we live in, right? I remember hearing about the Lane Kiffin situation when it was going to happen. He was going to meet with those guys on that Sunday, and then there was reports that everybody had to put the phones away or, like, drop them off before they go in. And, you know, there was still a leak, I think, from that meeting. It's just like somebody just feels the urge that – you know, if they get this, they can use it maybe as leverage, or they just they feel special to be able to put that out there. It's unfortunate. I hope that it comes out who that is, because you don't want somebody like that in your locker room. Because, like, the game of football, the game of sport, in sports, there's a lot that goes on in-house, and people always talk about keeping things in-house, right? So once you break that trust, there's really no getting that trust back. And doing something like that is just it's so disappointing. And hope you don't see this as a trend, I don't know. It just sucks that came out.
Well, and the other part of it, and talking to people who have heard it, it was interesting to me, Mike. There's places, some of the language, some people were offended by that. And I think sometimes there's a lack of understanding of how the language works in a locker room versus in public. You and I, we do this show every week. It's a podcast. It's a radio show. We know we have to be appropriate with our language. If you and I are sitting at a bar, just you and I having a beer, the language might be quite different. And that is part of the locker room. And I think that gets lost in translation here.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you recorded a locker room around the country, every locker room, and it got put out there, whatever – or in-house conversations with players and coaches and player to player, like, people would be furious, right? especially these days, like the cancel culture and all that stuff. Like, it's not meant for that type of audience. It's meant to be in-house. That's the locker room. Like it or not, that is the environment of a locker room. That's how they go. It's a bunch of testosterone, a bunch of males in there competing at a high level. Like, that's how it is. Like, it is. You know what's funny? I mean, agree with it or not, but Pat McAfee show, when he has that thing at the end, he goes, and you might hear a couple cuss words, because you know what? That's how people talk. So if you're offended, then don't watch. And that's how I feel about, like, a locker room or a football facility, and not just football. That's just sports.
And there were, though, some things, topics of conversation that came up, though, that I think were fascinating and educational. And if folks hadn't heard this audio, there were players who spoke up. There were discussions on different topics. And one of them that really fascinated me, Mike, was the conversation on the distribution of NIL money, how it goes in building a team. If there's a finite amount of money, how do you distribute it? Do you distribute it evenly among players? Do you give more for seniority? Do you give to everyone on the roster? Do you focus on the better players? And that came up as a topic. And I was just curious, as someone who's on the inside of that kind of conversations, I was curious your take.
Yeah, I think it depends on what program you look at. I think we're still relatively new in the day and age of paying players and what that should look like, what the blueprint is for that. I think it's different everywhere. I think Andy Frank and James Franklin had a different approach than what Matt Campbell may come in with. I know for a fact there's other schools that they take a completely different approach than what we were doing at Penn State with Andy Franklin and Coach Franklin. And it depends on where you're at. Like, it may fit. It depends on your roster, what do you have. I think I remember hearing USC, they're willing to pay all those freshmen and transfers that they got from this previous season because they were just kind of out on the older guys. So they really weren't worried about that. They were building for the future. Whereas, like, Coach Franklin, I think Andy Frank, they were just trying to keep what they had going, because they already had a structure, right? And they were just continuing to execute that structure, which wasn't paying top dollar to a freshman. Here, say that freshman had pretty much earn it as the years went on, which is a good approach if it makes sense for what your situation is. So it's different everywhere. And it will be interesting to see, you know, how Matt Campbell and his crew kind of navigate that here. The good thing is, as everybody knows, is we have a ton of resources here. So he's going to have a lot of resources to play with.
And the thing is, with so many players graduating, so few players coming in from high school recruits, there's a lot of openings, but also a lot of cash to be able to go out there, which leads to this question, Mike, just strategically and even what are the tactically, how do you approach the portal? What does that process look like right now? You'll have an entire country full of players that you might be interested in, and you got a lot of holes to fill. How do you approach that?
Well, he has to go through his meetings and player retention too. And I think that simultaneously, I don't know how he's going to do this, but you're going to have to recruit at the same time while you're trying to play or retain, because of that, I look at it more as a deadline, that January 2nd, which it starts the portal, but everywhere, everybody knows, like a lot of those conversations are being had right now. So to be ready or get prepared to have a good portal run, he has to understand the current roster, who he wants to retain, who's going to retain, all the moving pieces before he can really evaluate what he needs from the portal, right? Like you could say he needs a portal guy, or he needs a quarterback. Well, how do you know that? Has he talked to Gronk yet, right? Or does he like what, you know, Gronk can bring to the table to this system, right? No, he hasn't. Okay, well, he needs to do that before we decide that we're going to go into the portal and recruit a quarterback. So all those for each position needs to happen before he's able to say, yes, this is exactly what we need from the portal.
And he's going to need to put his staff together too.
Yes. Yes. And you know how these things work. He probably has already talked to all the staff that's going to be coming. So who knows? He might have a bunch of guys with him coming tomorrow. I think I saw reports that he does have, I don't know, like the titles are so different with personnel and like it may be the GM. It just might be his name is, or the title's a little bit different, but he might be acting as the GM. So his personnel guy is like, I think was announced as the first hire. So that's a heck of a job that guy has in front of him. I respect the crap out of those guys, especially now. You know, I've always talked about, you know, my respect that I have for Andy Frank and the job that he does and what those guys do, because it's tough, especially coming in a new job like this with that January 2nd transfer portal. That's a stressful time.
And this is, let's face it, it's a team in transition. A lot of guys are moving on, graduating. You're not getting replenished by the freshman class, recruiting class of 26. And it's still up in the air how many guys are going to leave via the portal. Mike, you know, you started the show saying, gee, what are we all going to talk about after bringing the coach in? Well, guess what? We've got plenty to talk about with personnel going on in the next couple of weeks. That's going to be the final word. Mike, thank you. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you tune in next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.